Welcome to the Advisor Pact Monthly Session. I'm Mark Little. We do this session each and every month for members of the Advisor Pact Monthly Program. This is your opportunity to get your questions answered. Each month, we give you a project to work on, and then we come together right here in this session to deal with questions or issues that you come up with. So if during this session, as you're implementing your monthly project, you have questions, things that you're encountering, struggles that you are dealing with, any question you've got whatsoever about implementing truly comprehensive financial services or this new financial services paradigm that we talk about in the Advisor Pact Monthly Program, this is your opportunity. Just examine the GoToWebinar panel, and you'll see two ways to get me questions today. One is by typing in your question. So if you type in your question, if it's in context and relevant to what I'm talking about at the moment, then I'll deal with it right then and there. If not, I will look at the typed questions before we get off, before the end of today's session. Now, if you have a little bit more complex question, or if you want to talk something through, no problem. If you continue to look at your GoToWebinar panel, there's also a spot on there for you to raise your hand and just let me know that you've got a question. And when I get to a breaking point, I will unmute you, and we can talk through your issue. The Advisor Pact Monthly Program is a unique program. It's the only program of its type anywhere in the world. It is for advisors who are contemplating or who are actively implementing truly comprehensive financial services. The objective of this program is to provide you with the tools to transform your business in order to be able to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. You know, a service which is going to radically differentiate you from other advisors and is going to place you in a category of one, so that potential clients of yours actually have no other choice than to hire you if what they're seeking is truly comprehensive financial services. So in the process of ramping up your capabilities to deliver this higher level of service, you also make a pledge to deliver on what we call the four client expectations, which potential clients claim they're not able to find anywhere in any advisor at any price. So the premise of our program is that in addition to moving towards delivering truly comprehensive financial services, you agree to make this advisor pact with each and every ideal client. PACT being an acronym describing the four client expectations. P is for protection. You pledge to protect your client's assets, their financial strategy, and their privacy. Attention. You pledge to pay close attention so that whenever your ideal client's plan drifts off course, even just a little bit, you're going to be right there to provide the necessary course corrections required to get them back on track. Coordination. You pledge to coordinate all the financial products and the financial people in your ideal client's life so that every recommendation is perfectly aligned with each client's overarching strategy. And finally, transparency. You pledge that your ideal client's going to fully understand all the upfront and the hidden costs that they're paying for every single one of their financial products, as well as all the financial people in their life that they're paying, starting with you and what you're making. But the point is, these are the four things that that many clients claim that we have data that we can tell you with authority that clients say that they cannot seem to find anywhere. This is what clients feel. No one's protecting them. No one's paying attention. No one's coordinating all their financial people and their financial products. And, you know, sadly, there is very little transparency, and clients often don't know what they're paying. So you're going to solve that, and this program is the only program in existence that's designed to move you towards specifically implementing truly comprehensive financial services to deliver on these four client expectations. Well, of all the questions that I received this month, as I'm waiting, you know, feel free to break in. If you've got questions, we'll take your live questions. But in looking at the questions that were submitted to me this month, there was one that really stood out. There were several advisors that submitted questions that kind of led to this same premise of a question. So I just picked this question to be representative of several, and we'll deal with it today. The question is, I'm newer to the financial services industry. I've only been a financial advisor for 3 years. How can I compete with experienced veteran advisors out there? Don't affluent ideal clients actually prefer to deal with these more experienced advisors? Well, we're going to deal with this head on today, because that's actually an incorrect and what we call limiting belief. Newer advisors have actual advantages over experienced financial advisors. Now, I come at this from a unique perspective. I was an experienced advisor when I built the process to deliver truly comprehensive financial services back in 1999, or starting in 1999. And I know some of the differences between veteran advisors and newer advisors, because I was a veteran advisor having to struggle with implementing this new business model, this new truly comprehensive financial services paradigm. And my unique perspective also comes from the fact that starting in 2002, I began coaching advisors like you. Many advisors have implemented our system since 2002. And we've worked with hundreds of advisors all over the world. And many of them are veteran advisors, and many of them have been newer advisors. So I've got the perspective of, you know, what are the differences between a veteran advisor implementing this truly comprehensive financial services business model versus newer advisors implementing this new paradigm. And so I've come to the belief that newer advisors actually have advantages over veteran advisors. Let me walk you through this. So if you're a newer advisor to the industry, I think you'll learn a lot here about, you know, the advantages that you actually have in the marketplace. And if you're a veteran advisor listening to this, you have a lot to learn here, because you'll be able to see what it is that newer advisors have as an advantage over you that you've got to step up and block. You've got to step up and resolve. You know, this is something that's real. This is something that we've noticed over time, and it's a fact. Newer advisors have distinct advantages. So let's start with the paradigm itself. We have the traditional financial services model, and ideal clients are very frustrated with the traditional model, and they are demanding more. They're demanding a new paradigm. So you have the traditional financial services business model versus the new financial services paradigm. So let's kind of go through each of them. Let's talk about, so what is the traditional financial services business model from a client perspective? You know, we've got data on this. We've spent, you know, I've spent all the years starting in 1999, I have studied affluent clients and looked at data associated with this traditional financial services model in establishing the new paradigm. Okay, so what is, so that we're all on the same page here, when I say traditional financial services business model, what do I mean? Well, it means that there are financial people, professionals in every affluent client's life. So you have an affluent person, they have financial people in their life. They've got accountants, they've got No, they've got their money parked somewhere. It may be at a bank, or it may be in mutual funds, or they may have a financial advisor. But they've got financial people, you know, around wherever their money is currently parked. They've got typically an estate planning lawyer who, you know, drafted wills and trusts for them at some point. They've got insurance people in their life. They've got auto and homeowners insurance, typically life insurance and various kinds of insurance. And nobody is coordinating these people. If these people ever get coordinated, it's because the client themselves coordinated them. So that is the traditional financial services business model. There's usually no overarching plan or strategy. Most clients, you know, they have an idea in their head. They certainly know what they want in life financially, but seldom is that ever written down, and almost never is there an overarching plan or strategy. Even with multimillionaires, there's typically never a plan or a strategy that's in writing that could be produced and shown to the professionals so that they understand, you know, what's the plan. And these professionals therefore never talk to each other. So they're giving recommendations, but they don't have any overarching plans. So their individual recommendations coming from all these financial professionals are completely oblivious to whatever the overarching plan is, because there's nothing they've ever seen. There's nothing in writing that's kind of pulling it all together. Clients often worry in the traditional financial services model about ulterior motives. So let's say they get a recommendation from their insurance agent, or let's say they do have a financial advisor who recommends some kind of a financial product. Clients often worry about ulterior motives, like, is this being recommended to me because it's better, it's good for me, or because it, you know, it's got a high commission or something that compensates the advisor better, and other ulterior motives, other conflicts of interest. Clients worry about this in the traditional model because nobody is actually tasked with policing and protecting the client's interests. There's no single professional or group of professionals who are conflict free, who look the client in the eye and say, "Hey, it's my job to identify potential conflicts of interest. It's my job to protect your financial assets and protect your financial strategy." There's just nobody in the traditional financial business model who thinks it's their job to do that. And so clients, and in addition to everything, clients don't know what they're paying for their financial products and services. You know, I've over the years, as we've looked at these studies and I've talked to affluent people, and you'd think, you know, multimillionaires that should know better. They say things like, you know, I'm hardly paying anything for my financial products. You know, I don't pay any commissions, you know, and as though there's a free lunch. People that should know better. These clients literally do not know what they're paying for many of the financial products and services. And that's the traditional financial services model. So let's look. So then what is the new financial services paradigm? You know, so what is it that, you know, we're trying to move the business model to? And what's the break? What makes it so difficult to make this shift from the traditional to the new financial services paradigm? Well, in the new paradigm, there is a most trusted advisor, a single advisor who steps forward and tells the client, "I'm there to protect your interest. I'm going to be your most trusted advisor. I'm going to pull everything together, and I'm going to be the one policing your assets and identifying conflicts of interest. I'm going to protect your interests. And I'm going to coordinate everything. I'm going to coordinate all the financial products that you've got. I'm going to coordinate all the financial people in your life. And I'm going to do it in a way that's conflict-free." And in the new financial services paradigm, this most trusted advisor makes sure that all the financial advisor professionals talk to each other. You know, the accountant should be talking to the money manager, the estate planning lawyer should be talking to the insurance expert, the insurance expert should be talking to the financial planner should be talking to the money manager, you know, and so forth. They should all be talking to each other, and in this new model, they do. The financial professionals are always collaborating with each other. There is a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy in place. and it's in writing, obviously, and it's regularly updated. So this is the life in the new paradigm. There is a plan, there's an overarching plan, and all the individual recommendations from the various professionals are always perfectly aligned with the overarching plan. Why? Well, because there's a most trusted advisor making sure that that's the case and that all potential conflict of interest are exposed, but every recommendation is perfectly aligned with the plan. And in this new paradigm, in this new way of doing business, clients always know exactly what they're paying for. So this is the new financial services paradigm. You get the picture? So what is the break? You know, notice the broken bridge here. Why is it so difficult to move from the old traditional financial services model to the new financial services paradigm? And why is it that veteran advisors, more experienced advisors, struggle with this? And why is it that new advisors actually have the advantage? Well, let's explore that. There are three primary reasons. In my study of this over the last 17 years, I can tell, and I've been in the business 30 years, so I built my own business, and I'll tell you a little bit more about that and the changes that I faced in making this very change that that you're working towards, trying to implement truly comprehensive financial services, which is the new financial services paradigm. There are three things that newer advisors don't have that that veteran advisors actually struggle with. Veteran advisors can be complacent. Newer advisors are not complacent, almost never complacent. Newer advisors are not afraid of the hard work that's going to be required to make this change. That's number one. Number two is veteran advisors have very obvious blind spots. Newer advisors don't have blind spots, and newer advisors are not oblivious to the trends, to the way things are moving, to the sense that there is in the marketplace that clients are demanding more, and you can't just continue delivering the same old, and think your business is going to stay in place. No. Newer advisors don't have any of these blind spots, and they realize that there are opportunities here and that the markets are changing, and newer advisors are quicker to move because they're not hindered by these blind spots. They don't slow them down. And veteran advisors fear change, okay? A veteran advisor fears change. Newer advisors don't fear change. They aren't jaded. They're not cynical by past failures. Very little in by way of, newer advisors don't have as much in place. So there's less change. Veteran advisors fear change because there's so much infrastructure already in place. They've been in business years and years and years. They have, dozens, if not hundreds, if not thousands of clients. And so the idea of changing things, moving from the traditional financial services business model that has been so successful for them all these years, the idea of moving to the new financial services paradigm represents a ton of change. So let's take them one at a time. Let's talk about veteran advisors being complacent. Let's drill into that one just a little bit. So newer advisors are not complacent. Newer advisors are actually willing to work harder than veteran advisors. It makes sense. You know, there's a certain comfort level associated with success. A veteran experienced advisor making hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars in their business that they've built are just less motivated to make an extra effort. Newer advisors are willing to work much, much harder than these veteran advisors. They're willing to make the effort to build a skilled team. It really takes time. It takes a lot of time to build the team. Newer advisors have no problem with this going, and there are so many talented professionals out there. You know, newer advisors realize that they don't have to have a huge budget and hire a gigantic staff on payroll. That there are already skilled, talented professionals out there in the areas of tax, financial planning, money management, insurance, estate planning. There are all these professionals already out there in these businesses that, yes, it takes a big effort to go out and find the most skilled ones, but they're out there. And so newer advisors are nimble, and they're willing to work hard and move fast, and they're willing to put up the hassles of staff. You know, one of the most frustrating things, especially to veteran advisors, is if let's say a veteran advisor decides to make the effort and says, okay, I'm going to build this team. You know, I've done fine all these years, just one man band, just me advising clients. But okay, Mark, I'll build a team. I'll go out and get a tax expert. I'll get, you know, I'll go out and find an estate planning expert, an insurance expert, and, you know, I'll build these five subject matter experts into the team. And then you get them in place only to find out that, which is very common, that once you've built your team, one or more are not really up to the task. They're not, that they may be very successful at what they do, and they're usually very good at what they do, but they're not good team players, and they're, and one or more, usually one or more of the team of five, is just unwilling to do the work. And so it creates a bunch of staff hassles. Now you've got somebody on the team, a subject matter expert, that's just not willing to make the effort and do the work. And so the others on the team get restless because they've got this one subject matter expert not doing the work that they're doing. And so so basically this idea of a newer advisor is willing to put up with these hassles, and a newer advisor is, you know, after building the team, is much more comfortable with just replacing a team member even after they've got them in place if they're not doing the job. Newer advisors are just not happy with the status quo. They're willing to work harder, and they are willing to put, after getting a team in place, turn over that team and keep finding new team members until they've got the skilled team in place that really is going to impress the client. And so veteran advisors are not as willing to put up with these staff hassles, and newer advisors, let's just face it, newer advisors are willing to hustle more to meet more potential clients. I mean, you know, this whole idea of client acquisition at the end of the day, to use a cliche, at the end of the day, it really boils down to how many potential clients are you meeting with on a weekly basis. And the distinct advantage that newer advisors have that they don't even realize is that newer advisors are much, much, much more likely to put in more potential client interaction time. That is to say, on a weekly basis, a newer advisor meets with lots more potential clients than a veteran advisors. Veteran advisors are, I'm not going to use the word lazy, but they just don't, they're not as motivated. They don't feel like they need to get out and hustle to meet people. And newer advisors don't have that problem. And newer advisors are willing to fight the inevitable internal battles that will come up if you make the commitment to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. And there are lots of internal battles, but I'll just pick one just to give you an example. Compliance questions. So, you know, it's really humorous because in this whole paradigm of this new paradigm of delivering more and better financial services to clients, it means that you're going to know clients better, that you're going to be doing more for each client, you're going to be getting more involved in each of their financial lives, and that you're going to coordinate the financial people in their lives at a higher level. So the clients are getting more and better financial service, okay? Financial advice. And so it is better for the client. And the irony is compliance departments, not all, and as a matter of fact, it's gotten much better over the years. I'd say especially over the last 5 years, I see compliance departments really becoming, you know, a lot more understanding about this. But the bottom line is there are still some compliance departments that, you know, they question, why are you coordinate? Why are you calling and why are you talking to the tax accountant? Why are you talking to the estate planning lawyer? Why do you have things in your files, you know, from the tax accountant and the insurance agents and auto insurance and all that stuff that seems to them to be irrelevant to, let's say, investment advice or whatever it is they're focused on. So anyway, there are just these compliance questions that are going to require time and effort, and you've got to deal with compliance consultants when they raise their thoughts about what you're doing. You know, in our model, you have excellent answers to every question because you're serving the client. It's almost indefensible to create a compliance department to create obstacles to better communication and better advice and better coordination between, you know, accountants and lawyers and insurance agents and all this that you're doing to coordinate truly comprehensive financial services. But nevertheless, there you have compliance departments questioning that. And just newer advisors are willing to fight these battles. Veteran advisors get tired of it. They just don't, they're not willing to do it. They're complacent. They just figure, why hassle? Why put up with the hassle? And I say compliance departments are improving and have improved dramatically over time. It's for a very obvious reason. Compliance departments will allow advisors to shift to this new financial paradigm because it serves clients better, and they will create less obstacles for advisors as time goes on, because otherwise financial advisors will leave their firms and have in large numbers and with some of these restrictive compliance departments. And so while it is still improving, newer advisors are willing to fight these internal battles. I came across this a few years ago, but I came across an article that I thought was really good about this idea of complacency. You can look it up if you want to, but there was this article called Success, A Breeding Ground for Complacency, and it was just a whole article on how, and it wasn't it was not about financial advisors. It was just about this whole notion of the more successful you are, the more complacent you are, and it was kind of a warning. And the article, the author works off of a quote from Bill Gates. The quote is, "Success is a lousy teacher. It seduces smart people into thinking that they can't lose." Bill Gates said that. And more often than not, and this is from the article, more often than not, great accomplishments cause individuals and organizations to become comfortable with the way that they're doing things. Businesses turn static, workers turn focus inward, even the most dynamic organizations can turn complacent, thinking that what they're doing is right and that there is no need to change or improve regardless of what's happening in the outside world. Okay, that's perfect. And in that article, the author gives some questions about that helps you as a business owner ask questions about your staff to determine whether complacency is setting in. So I'm focusing this session today on advisors who have been in the business, who are newer advisors to the financial services industry. But regardless of how long you've been in the financial services industry, whether you're new or whether you're a veteran, these are good questions to ask to determine if complacency, which is insidious and slowly moves in like a cancer to your business and freezes the required progress that your clients expect in order for you to remain competitive or for you to actually be different from your competition. Here are some questions to ask. Are your team's conversations inwardly focused? So whenever you do speak with your team, whether it's your administrative assistant or if you're in the process of implementing our model, you know, your entire team, your subject matter experts and so forth, whenever you have conversations with the team, are they more and more inwardly focused and they're not about conversations about what potential clients actually desire, or what are the conversations? Even are you talking about potential competition? you know you're becoming complacent when you never when you never have conversations about what it is that potential clients would like you to be delivering. In other words, what could you be doing more and better and different to actually appeal to potential clients? That's an outwardly focused conversation, as are conversations addressing what it is that other advisors are doing who might be in a good position to steal your clients. You know, are you even having these conversations? Another question is, are past failures discussed only in order to stall new initiatives? In other words, when you have conversations about new things and new things that you might try, is there a culture where the conversation ultimately shifts to, well, we've tried that before and none of this has ever worked before? And so it's kind of an excuse not to change, rather than talking about failures as learning experiences to improve and change things. Do important meetings end with no decisions about what needs to happen immediately or improvements that need to be made now? Do team members regularly blame others for problems rather than taking responsibility and changing their own behavior? And finally, are highly selective facts used to shoot down data that suggests that there are major challenges or even opportunities that are knocking at the door? These are the blind spots that we'll be talking about in a minute. But these are the signs of complacency, and these are some questions that you can ask internally, which get you thinking about, you know, what is the level of complacency? Newer advisors are less willing to miss opportunities. They're not complacent. You have an advantage if you're a newer advisor, because you are much more likely to focus on what's possible versus it won't work, you know, kind of a negative approach to things. You tend as newer advisors to think not in terms of that can't be done, but more in terms of what will it take to get it done. And so you focus, therefore, on what's possible. And you pay attention to the changing market environment. You have, over the years, and we're seeing more and more, and clients are certainly aware of this, the idea of automated advice. You know, it's actually a joke when you think about, you know, what truly comprehensive financial services actually means for a client and what it actually is, because it requires, you know, at least at this stage in technology, human beings to actually carefully pay attention to a client. But, you know, newer advisors are aware that there's this myth that clients have about the fact that more and more they're able to jump online and, you know, just run through some algorithm at the brokerage firm, you know, just run through a little quick survey and then determine their risk profile and establish their asset allocation and set up an investment portfolio. And, you know, it's all pretty much automated. It's quote unquote free. So newer advisors are at least paying attention to this changing market environment. You know, whether affluent people are still willing, you know, would rather pay someone to just take care of it for them, which is true. At least newer advisors are aware of this trend, and they are aware that clients are aware of this, and that there is kind of a view in the client's mind increasingly of the commoditization of advice that, you know, newer advisors don't take it for granted. They realize that there is at least a part of the client's perception that, you know, they're wondering, could I, you know, in the current technology, couldn't I just jump online and get all this advice for free? And they listen to the marketplace. Newer advisors are much more likely to listen to clients and potential clients and listen to what they say that they're wanting versus, you know, what they're actually currently getting in terms of services. In other words, newer advisors are much more likely to identify the gap between what clients say they want and what they're actually getting. So that means newer advisors are much more willing to give affluent clients what they truly want. And there is a gap. There's a huge gap between, you know, if you really sat down and understood and talked to affluent clients and what they truly want, from their financial advisor. Newer advisors are much more willing to give the clients what they want. And newer advisors are also much more open and willing to explore different compensation arrangements. Whereas more veteran advisors, they tend to be, you know, they have an infrastructure in place. They're used to billing clients a certain way. They have kind of this complacent attitude about, you know, we do our compensation this way because we've always done our compensation this way. There's just not an openness to new ways of doing it. Whereas newer advisors, rather than saying this is what the market is used to, just hypothetically, you know, a veteran advisor would say, oh, clients are used to paying a percent of their assets or some percentage of their assets, maybe a percent or a percent and a half, whatever, 2%, whatever it is that they're charging. And, you know, and they're complacent about that. Whereas newer advisors are happy to take a completely different approach and to explore what clients are actually willing to pay. So a newer advisor is much more willing to, you know, pay attention to the market, listen to the clients, and then propose to a client, hey, if we were to provide a service that did all of these things that you are currently not receiving, that you want, that you say that you want, you know, would you be willing to pay, you know, 5 or 10 times more than you're paying now? And there, you know, newer advisors are much more willing to explore what clients are actually willing to pay, versus, you know, just being complacent about just traditional compensation methods. Now let's talk about blind spots. You know, veteran advisors have distinct blind spots that newer advisors don't have. You know, newer advisors just have fewer blind spots. If for no other reason, then they're newer. You know, you think, I'm a veteran advisor. When I implemented all this truly comprehensive financial services and I developed all these methods that you're implementing now, I was trained in opposite ways. So one of the things that as a newer advisor, if you think about, you know, something that you that does not hinder you, you're not hindered by the fact that you were trained in different ways. Veteran advisors are trained in opposite ways. Let me give you some examples. Veteran advisors are trained, as much as they deny it, the industry has trained veterans to be more salespeople than trusted advisors. I know many advisors really push back on that, many veteran advisors, but it is true, and I've seen the data on this, and even more than the reality of this issue is the client perception. And definitely clients perceive in the financial services industry that financial advisors are much more salespeople than they are, you know, trusted advisors. And clients feel like finding a trusted advisor is literally worse than finding a needle in a haystack, that it's difficult, if not impossible, to find this trusted advisor. So even though most veteran advisors push back vehemently on this notion, from a client perspective, clients feel this way. And so, you know, a newer advisor doesn't have this blind spot. If you put this to a newer advisor, you know, are you willing to move away from being a salesperson and focus exclusively on being a trusted advisor to your clients? Newer advisors are willing to identify what that means, you know, to identify how, you know, what do I need to specifically do in order to behave like a trusted advisor and completely disassociate myself with sales. Now, it depends on what end of the industry you're in. So this is much more likely that veterans have been trained this way if they come out of the investment side of the industry or the insurance side of the industry. So I myself came out of the investment side of the industry, and, you know, I worked for a Wall Street-based firm, and, Yeah, as much as we, and I'm not questioning that the advisors, the veteran advisors' hearts are in the right place. As a matter of fact, I know of the advisors we've worked with over the years, almost without exception, the advisors had their hearts in the right place. There was no question about that. They were attempting to do well by the client. They were attempting to make the best, you know, recommendations that would benefit the client. No question about any of that. It's just the way they were trained, the way that veterans were trained, and the infrastructure of the industry connecting compensation to products. You know, the fact that if a client bought this product over that financial product, you know, there is a difference in compensation. You know, that whole thing leads to a sales environment versus if you come, let's say, from the accounting side of the industry, where there are still conflicts of interest, and I could go through that with you. There are still, potential conflicts of interest if you're becoming a most trusted advisor, having started out as a tax accountant, let's say. But you tend in the accounting industry not to have had that sales training. and most veteran advisors were trained, you don't turn away any money. So even veteran advisors may have minimums for clients as they become more and more successful. You know, I only work with clients that have $1 million or more, or some even higher minimums. But I'm talking about the way they were trained. Their mindset is, why would I turn away any money? If I have an existing client, even they'll scramble for just a couple thousand. They'll put staff on it, if nothing else, to get a client to invest another couple of thousand dollars here and there. I mean, there is just this mindset for veteran advisors that you don't turn away any money. Newer advisors don't have that blind spot. In other words, if a newer advisor were to set a standard within the context of the new financial services paradigm that says our services only make sense for clients that have more than $1 million, in other words, are more than $2 million, so multimillionaires are the only people that meet the profile of those that we serve best. Newer advisors don't have the blind spot that, you know, has them trained not to turn away money. Newer advisors are much more comfortable with setting minimums and establishing minimum standards for clients so that, you know, you only deal with certain clients who are the profile of the clients that you serve best. Newer advisors are much more open to this idea. Veteran advisors struggle with an ideal client profile that where the client has to fit all the criteria before you'll even consider working with the client. Veteran advisors really struggle with this because they were trained never to turn away money. And veteran advisors often have a mindset that clients just aren't willing to pay for professional services for financial advice the way they do for lawyers and accountants. You know, clients are accustomed to paying, you know, hourly rates to professionals to do their taxes. Clients are used to paying hourly rates to professionals to draft their wills and trusts, you know, to pay lawyers to do that. But in the financial services industry, you know, veterans, and I've seen data on this, veteran advisors who are very experienced, they have this blind spot. They just don't think clients are willing to pay more, and they don't believe that clients are willing to pay for professional services in the financial services area the same way they are in accounting and law and other professions. So this is a limiting belief. It's not true, but I'm just saying, for you newer advisors out there, you don't have this blind spot. You don't have this, you know, this position, this mental construct that's been built up over decades or years in the industry that just prevents you from being able to see that clients are willing to pay more. Clients are willing to pay financial services professionals in ways similar to the way they pay accountants and lawyers. It's just a total blind spot for veterans. So newer advisors have fewer blind spots. And this is an advantage for you that's not going to create obstacles to your implementation. We have noticed over the years that newer advisors have accelerated results because they have fewer blind spots that hold them back. And veterans advisors think things like this. You hear veteran advisors saying things like, and this is the complacency and the blind spots, okay? It's both. You hear veteran advisors, when I'm talking to them about the new financial services paradigm, I'm talking about how clients have higher expectations, and you know, there are not every multimillionaire desires truly comprehensive financial services. But the point that I make to veteran advisors is that for those multimillionaires who are seeking more service, who are seeking truly comprehensive financial services, even if they don't know what it's called, these clients want something more and better. But the advisor, the veteran advisors are saying things back to me like, well, none of my clients are complaining about this. You know, this is a blind spot. It's the notion of saying, just because I'm not hearing to the contrary, I'm providing whatever service I'm currently providing. I'm doing what I've always done, and clients are not complaining. I don't hear any complaints. So therefore, if no clients are, you know, standing on their tippy toes screaming for truly comprehensive financial services, well, then I must be awesome. I must be doing everything that I need to do. You know, why do more? And you also hear veteran advisors say things like, clients are getting what they're paying for. So, you know, it's this whole notion of, you know, why should I do more unless clients pay more? It's kind of the chicken or the egg theory. Like, should an advisor be doing more to test the waters to see if clients want more? Or should they take the approach that I hear most often, which is, hey, clients are paying me a certain level of compensation, and they're getting what they're paying for. So I'm not going to do more effort. I'm not being paid to do more effort. And or kind of the corollary to this is my clients are getting more than they would get at the competition for this same fee. It's all a blind spot. These are all things, you know, I don't have clients complaining about what I'm currently providing them in terms of service, and my clients are getting exactly what they're paying for, so I'm not willing to make any more efforts to provide any additional value to my clients, even if it's to test the waters to see what clients are willing to pay, you know, to see if they would appreciate more and pay more. These are the blind spots that veteran advisors have, and we hear a lot of things like this, and these are all limiting beliefs, which have the implication of blocking action. So therefore, veteran advisors don't move forward because of thinking like this. They have these blind spots that prevent them from moving forward. Newer advisors don't have any such blind spot. So, you know, this whole idea of blind spots is a big deal, that newer advisors don't have this issue. Veteran advisors are absolutely oblivious to market trends and the evolution of client thinking of client thinking and expectations. So if the market is moving to commoditize advice, and clients are aware of this, that, you know, you can jump online with some of these discount brokerage firms, and you can go through a somewhat, and with some of these firms, you can go through a somewhat sophisticated, I hesitate to call it a planning module, but you know, you kind of go through a little online survey, call it a online conversation. Clients can jump on there, kind of work through the automation, and then at the end of the day, they end up with a risk tolerance profile and an asset allocation that is presumably appropriate, and even selecting investments. You know, it's all automated, and this is the industry, this is the market trend, you know, making what we as a financial advisors offer, you know, fully automated. Well, it's a joke. It has no way to compare with truly comprehensive financial services. Appealing to a client that's just, even if they're aware of this, if they knew that there was an option where an advisor could actually do more of this for them, in other words, save them time. Time being the biggest value to these particular affluent clients, you know, it's a difference in mindset. And as the industry and the market trends and the technology is improving, there's an evolution of client thinking, and it is that I could get this advice for free, even if it's not true. But what the newer advisor sees that the veterans often miss is that there's a whole market out there that this automation does not appeal to. And that it's a mindset of, you know, one client looking at this automation and saying, hey, that's cool, I'd rather do that, it's free. It's the old do-it-yourselfer mindset. So there are, you know, clients out there that are natural do-it-yourselfers. And I would say there's a large chunk of clients out there that are natural do-it-yourselfers. But just as their approach, you know, Bill Bachrach describes this beautifully in his book, Values-Based Financial Planning. He talks about the do-it-yourselfer client who says to themselves, you know, why would I do anything? Why would I pay anyone to do something that I could do for myself? You know, and Bill makes the point in the book where he says, the financial delegator, in other words, this market that we're talking about, that actually, if they knew an advisor existed that could deliver this high level of truly comprehensive financial services, you know, they'd jump on it in a heartbeat, because their answer to that question, that do-it-yourselfer, is a very compelling one. Because the financial delegator would respond by saying, why would I do anything myself that I could possibly hire someone else to do? It's just a difference in mindset. And there's been an evolution in the marketplace. There's a market trend towards automation. Clients are aware of this, and clients are expecting more. The evolution of client thinking and expectations is what worked in the past will not work in the future. Or maybe said a better way, the services that you provided in the past are going to be woefully inadequate going forward, because clients are expecting more and more. They know that you can get a lot of financial advice free on the internet, and they expect quite a bit more. But the newer advisor is open to the idea that, you know, I'm willing to make this effort, and I believe the market is out there, and I don't have this blind spot, you know, as long as clients are willing to pay more. So from a blind spot standpoint, you know, a veteran advisor can't change what they don't understand, you know. And for veteran advisors, just thinking about this blind spot thing, you know, what you think to yourself as a newer advisor, why don't more veteran advisors implement? Well, the reason why more advisors don't implement is very uncomplicated. One of my favorite quotes, it's kind of an old quote, but the quote is, it's difficult to get a man to understand something when his job depends upon not understanding it. And so I think that is at play here with the blind spots. You have veteran financial advisors who, you know, they've built up a business, it's successful, they're happy with, you know, they'd be happy to grow, but they're happy with the way things are. So there's just a level of complacency, and there's this whole blind spot that, they can't understand something because, you know, their whole worldview depends on them not understanding, you know, the new world, the new paradigm. And then finally, and we'll finish up here, it's the fear of change. Newer advisors have less change. So veteran advisors fear change. I would say, you know, just it's human nature. People hate change just in general. And, you know, veteran advisors have more in place, and therefore there's more change. And newer advisors have less change because they have less in place. Makes perfect sense. Anyway, a new improved business model means more change for veterans than it does for newer advisors. And I'll just run through my own situation real quickly for you just to make this point. I was a veteran advisor when I developed all this truly comprehensive financial services business model that you're working through in the Advisor Pack Monthly program. Well, before I began making this transition, I had 1,242 clients. Now, I think we can all agree, that's a lot of clients. So then I created an ideal client profile, which is part of our methodology. It's part of what you do in this program in sequence. You very early on, you establish the profile of the client that you will serve best as you think about delivering truly comprehensive financial services. Well, I developed my ideal client profile, and I was shocked and scared to realize that I only had 17 ideal clients out of 1,242 total clients. I mean, I had very few ideal clients, and that, you know, and that I had 1,225 non-ideal clients. In other words, people that I would never be delivering, you know, truly comprehensive financial services for a variety of reasons. Mainly two reasons. One is that they'll either, these 1,225 will either never have enough money to be able to compensate me sufficiently to deliver that high level of service, or number two, they're not financial delegators. I had a lot of clients among those 1,225 that were do-it-yourselfers. So they don't want to pay more for a financial, for that kind of financial advice, and they don't want to take the advice. They're do-it-yourselfers. So anyway, my goal was 100 ideal clients. So I had to move from 17 to 100 ideal clients. This was terrifying to me. I realized that after 12 years in the business at that point, I was starting over. So I was faced with this, what seemed to me, Mount Everest-sized goal. You know, after 12 years in the business, only having 17 ideal clients, I was faced with now having to go out and find 83 new ideal clients. You know, this was terrifying to me. And just as terrifying was the idea of disengaging from 1,225 of my 1,242 clients. In other words, these were non-ideal clients. And, you know, I was faced at some point, I didn't have to disengage right away. But, you know, as I was adding new ideal clients, I knew that I would need to be disengaging from non-ideal clients. Well, my only point is that's a lot of change. So I just want you newer advisors out there to appreciate your position. You have no change. You don't have as much change to fear. I mean, you just don't have all this in place. You don't have all this infrastructure in place as I did and as most veteran advisors do. So you just have less to think about in terms of this change, and so it's just not as much change to worry about. Newer advisors are, you know, they in part don't fear change because they're fresh. You know, you as a newer advisor are more fresh and more optimistic than the typical veteran advisor who many, I'm not saying all, but a handful, and or I think all of us can admit in the secret part of our brain to being to a certain level of being jaded and cynical. And I'm just saying the more years that you are in the industry, it's human nature. The more rationalization that you build up about, you know, being jaded and cynical about new things. You know, the idea of change, just, you know, this whole idea that, oh, this won't work, or, you know, that little devil on your shoulder whispering in your ear saying don't bother because it just won't work. You know it won't work. Veteran advisors tend, and I'm not saying all, obviously we have a lot of veteran advisors that do great at implementing this, but I'm just pointing out for the purpose of this session how newer advisors aren't saddled with these anchors. And veteran advisors often view any improvement as a hassle because it represents change and there's a fear of change. Many times veteran advisors just feel like, hey, I've tried everything before. There's nothing new under the sun. So it's a rationalization that's focused on not changing because there's a fear of change. And also many veteran advisors, I'm not saying all, but I would say most veteran advisors don't have a great record of implementing. You know, most veteran advisors have tried implementing something new at times. And, you know, cannot honestly say that they implemented to completion. You know, they implemented until the new thing came along, and then once the new thing came along, they went to the new thing. So I would say this is not uncommon for veteran advisors, and newer advisors don't have that fear of change because they have this kind of long list of things they've tried to implement in the past that they just gave up on somewhere in the middle and never fully implemented. And so newer advisors don't have that problem. And then veteran advisors are just tired and they're unwilling to deal with the inevitable staff pushback. This is really, for most veteran advisors, this is the biggest complaint, that this new paradigm, this truly comprehensive financial services, and delivering it at a level that actually impresses clients, this will at some point lead to staff pushback. Staff saying, it's not worth the additional effort, or I'm not getting paid to do all this extra work, or just some kind of pushback from either internal staff like your assistant or your administrative manager, or external staff like a subject matter expert who's just pushing back on saying, you know, we don't really need to add more value to these clients. What we're doing now is fine, because they just, you know, they don't, either they fear change, they don't want to make the change, or they just don't want to make the extra effort. And so many veteran advisors have been, you know, it's like putting your hand on a stove. They've been stung with this sort of thing in the past, where at some point, if you push for higher standards, if you push for a greater effort on the part of staff, you know, there's a fear of change because staff will bite back. They'll snip at you from time to time and push back on the additional effort, and wondering, you know, and questioning whether they should be putting forth more work. And I can tell you right now, to deliver truly comprehensive financial services at a level that actually impresses clients, that's going to require more effort than anybody on the team has ever put forth before. And so this whole just this simple decision to implement truly comprehensive financial services is in itself a decision to work harder and to put forth more effort. And, you know, the fear of change for some veteran advisors is, I don't want to deal with the inevitable staff pushback on this. Well, as a newer advisor, you don't have this. You don't have this experience. You don't worry about it. You know, newer advisors take the approach, everybody's got to step up. It's kind of a shape up or ship out situation. Newer advisors are fresh and optimistic and much more likely to say, hey, everybody's got to step up, or you've got to, or anybody who's unwilling to step up has got to step out and let somebody else come in who's willing to do the work. And then just finally, veteran advisors fear change because, frankly, some veteran advisors just have what I would describe as an entitlement mentality. They just think they're immune to the need to change, or they feel like they deserve the position and the success that they've achieved, and therefore, you know, anything that topples their world or changes their world in any way is fearful. And they just think, hey, I built what I've got. I deserve what I have. And, you know, I fear I'm not going to change anything because I fear change, you know, any change might change my success. And so so there's this kind of entitlement mentality that prevents some veteran advisors from, you know, being willing to change. So, and I just want to make this point, just because you're a newer advisor to the financial services industry does not necessarily mean that you're a younger person. So in your question, you did not imply how old you were. So I'm not assuming that you're younger or older. You could be, you know, you could be a new financial advisor and not be younger. But I want to address this comment just for a second at younger advisors, because I do hear this from time to time. If you're younger, let's say in your 20s or 30s, and you're asking this question, don't ideal clients prefer to deal with veteran, experienced, you know, more seasoned advisors? Don't they prefer older advisors? I will say at a certain age, affluent clients actively seek younger professionals. You know, the person that first mentioned this to me and it was over 10 years ago, was Bill Bachrach, a friend of mine in the industry. And he made the comment that, and he's younger than me, and he made the comment that he had observed that affluent clients at a certain age, you know, they start worrying about the age of their doctor and the age of their dentist and the age of their, you know, lawyer and the age of their accountant, because, you know, their friends are starting to die off at some point, and they just don't want to worry about when they're gone, all their financial professionals and other professionals in their life dying too. So Bill made the point to me, and then now here I am, almost 60 years old, and I feel this way. I mean, eventually I got there where I, you know, I like the idea of having, you know, money manager, accountant, lawyer who's younger, because, you know, if I were to die, I want the people that I've handpicked on to kind of coordinate my financial affairs, I want those to be the same people that my daughter, who's just turned 20, deals with. And so, you know, I want younger professionals. And I'm just making the point that I think that you are wrong if you're younger. And as a matter of fact, you could make it a part of your ideal client profile if you're concerned about this and you're a younger advisor. You know, make it a part of your ideal client profile. You only deal with clients that are over age 55 or over age 60, whatever level you'd like to choose, because I can tell you now that I've seen it with my own eyes and I've felt the experience myself that it's true. At a certain age, affluent clients do actively seek younger professionals. That makes it an advantage for you. So my advice to you, just wrapping up here, eliminate all your limiting beliefs. If you're a newer advisor, just eliminate anything that smells like a limiting belief. Just stay focused on the new financial paradigm, which ideal clients actually want. Not all clients, but this is the trend. It's moving in this direction. Clients want more, and they can't seem to find it. So stay focused on the truly comprehensive financial services business model. Stay focused on the new financial services paradigm that we discussed, where, you know, clients that this appeals to, you know, this puts you in a position of being a financial services monopoly in your community. There are so many veteran advisors who either don't know what to do or are unwilling to make the effort that you are in the process of becoming the only game in town by implementing this new financial services paradigm. So wouldn't it be great if a potential client, once they understand what you do, they realize that it's not a choice between several advisors in town. It's if the client wants truly comprehensive financial services, you're the only game in town. It's either you or no one, because there is no other advisor who's able to do all these things and willing to do all these things. So I'll just thinking again about why more advisors don't implement this new business model, this new financial services paradigm. It's very uncomplicated. There's a quote that I love from the famous Jim Rohn, who said, It's easy to do. And this whole idea of implementing truly comprehensive financial services, it is hard work. There is a lot of work involved. But at the end of the day, I've never had an advisor implement all 11 steps of truly comprehensive financial services without looking back on it and saying, you know, at the end of the day, it was pretty easy to do to put this new financial services paradigm in place. But then why then don't more advisors implement this model? Because it's easier not to. It's easier just to continue doing what you're doing. So, you know, why do newer advisors have advantages when it comes to this movement from the traditional financial services business model to the new financial services paradigm? It's because you're willing to make the effort, you are eliminating all blind spots, and you don't fear change. And just stay in that zone, and you'll have a distinct advantage over veteran advisors. Well, that's it for the Advisor Pack Monthly Session. I'm Mark Little, and as always, we wish you all the best in implementing. See you next month.